Evans was not a professional scholar. He was not a university professor who'd been trained in Greek and Latin. He didn't teach these at a university at all. Rather, he was a man of the world. But like many of the best educated in the 19th century, he had been immersed in the world of the Greeks, of classical culture. And with him, as with these other archaeologists, it was a passion to find the real objects that attested the reality of that world, which otherwise was only known through myth, through epic, and through the work of the later Greek historians. So he was guided by these Greek traditions, the ones we've already alluded to, which remembered Crete as the home of King Minos and of a powerful naval empire. Now, the reason I raise all this is for this purpose. Archaeology has come a long way in the generations since Evans, and we now deal with more elaborate models trying to explain the growth and the change and the decline and the operation of various cultures. But none of this could have occurred in our study of the Bronze Age had there not been originally a handful of men with fire in their belly to go out, to get off their backsides, and simply to put a shovel into the ground. So while in some ways it's almost a cheap shot to say these early archaeologists often destroyed before they recorded properly, their notebooks can be difficult to read, there can be questions as to the veracity of some of their discoveries, and you're surely familiar with the fact that Schliemann has been attacked by many on these grounds. It's easy in hindsight to attack the shortcomings of these men, but on the other hand, we owe them a great deal. We owe them everything, in fact. Without them, we wouldn't even have a Bronze Age discipline. There's one other aspect of Evans's work that I want to really finish with today, and it's a problem that I alluded to a little bit earlier, and it's this. In the case of Minoan Crete, we have no literary records. We have no historian of Minoan Crete. We have no religious liturgy. We have no lyric poetry. We have no epic poetry. And it raises, I think, an extremely interesting question for the historian. To what degree can the historian really, reliably recreate a past civilization when it is essentially a mute civilization? That's not a simple question. It's one that became very important for me the first time I saw some of these frescoes at Knossos. These beautiful frescoes, because when you actually see them up close, you'll realize that while you may be looking at a figure which is 6 feet tall, shown in a particular hieratic position and beautifully painted, of that 6 feet, often 6 inches is original and 5.5 feet are restored. When you go to Knossos, which is one of the World Heritage archaeological sites, how much are you seeing that is truly Bronze Age, and how much are you seeing that is Evans's, perhaps intelligent, perhaps inspired, reconstruction of that culture? It's a troubling question. Now, there are many archaeologists who will tell you quite simply, citing their mantra, archaeology is archaeology is archaeology, by which they mean, regardless of what your literary sources tell you, you must simply go with what the archaeology shows you. And to a certain degree, that is true, and to a certain degree, we're tied to that because we have so few literary sources for the Minoan world. But where we don't have literary sources, we are still thrown back on interpretation, and the interpretation, in this case, of one particularly great and powerful man. I praise, therefore, like Brutus over the body of Caesar, Sir Arthur Evans for what he gave us in his work at Knossos. But in another lecture, we're going to see that part of his legacy also was to hold back the archaeology of the Bronze Age, as he posited a relationship between Minoan Crete and the second great Bronze Age culture of Greece, that of the Mycenaean world on the mainland. But the details of that we'll get to in the next lecture.